crispy, bad crispy, cloud not like.
Sorry for the turbulence, folks. He's harmless. He's safe as milk. Just a freak accident with some Jiffy Pop.
All right, that's it. Just get your stuff. Get out of here. Take him with you.
Oh, what an adorable little girl. Oh, look at her. Can I keep her?
Hey.
Oh, of course not. No pets allowed.
Welcome to Trilogy in Theory. My name is Webb, and this is my co-host, Mike, and we are traveling to hell for the next 3 weeks in more ways than...
Especially for this episode. This episode in particular.
Well, let's talk about comic books. Every comic book is someone's first comic book, right? That's what I think Stan Lee famously said. It's definitely not true today. Everything seems to be building upon issues that have come before it. And I read Marvel Essentials as a kid at the library. Do you remember those? They were like 25 issues, newspaper print, no color, jam-packed in one collection. So it'd be like Spider-Man Essentials Volume 1. It'd be Amazing Fantasy 15 and like the first 25 issues of Amazing Spider-Man. And they do multiple volumes. And that's how I got into comic books.
No, I'd say mine is like, I guess, you know, millions of other, back when comic books could sell millions of copies, Jim Lee's X-Men number one. That's what I remember, like, as far as not just buying something off the rack or having my parents say, like, hey, I want to read about Batman, and reading one issue, and then 6 months later, maybe they'd buy me another one. X-Men, that early 90s run, is the first time I remember, like, following along. Had the old-fashioned subscription. You know, you'd actually have it in the back where you could check off, like, have Marvel send it to you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it didn't have a local comic shop, so... no, I was not reading the classics. So I guess some of that is apropos as far as, you know, everyone's first issue, especially when I was just getting a single copy of something and then reading and obsessively rereading it. I'm sure our listeners are not surprised that you're like, we're going to feature Spawn, the film. First, let's talk about my history of comic books and avoid, let's kick the can down the road on talking about the film itself.
Well, but the reason that I mention it is that the first ever floppy I ever bought with my own money was Spawn issue number 35. And it was 50 cents in the bargain bin, of a used bookstore. And thank goodness that it was a flashback slash like recap issue. So I didn't feel lost. I was hooked immediately. Awesome artwork, garbage writing. I'm not sure if McFarlane was still writing it, but I know Greg Capullo was drawing it at the time. So I wanted to relive those early days of comic book collection, and so I started collecting those big fancy hardcovers that Spawn are collected in right now. They each have 25 issues, and so for this episode, I went through the first 25 issues, and boy, it's mostly awful writing. But there are stretches when it's actually pretty good. And I'm like, oh, McFarlane bringing it for this issue. And I went back. And then, you know, beginning of the book, you see who wrote what issue. And I looked at it. I was like, this was pretty good. Look back. Oh, Neil Gaiman came in and wrote this. Gotcha.
Oh, that's why the writing had a little uptick in quality.
And then, you know, back to crap quality. And then for like three or four issues, I'm like, oh, this is pretty good. Went back and checked who wrote it. Oh, Grant Morrison came in and wrote this. Son of a bitch. So, clearly, the comic book was popular based on its artwork and its style and the general atmosphere that it created. And that, I think, kind of can be said for the movie as well. I saw the movie in theaters, and I loved it at the time because, again, we grew up in a time when superhero movies were kind of rare still. They were getting more popular towards the end of the 90s, but it was still tough to find. And again, Spawn was not a household name, so it was exciting for me. Now, at in my late 30s, Spawn is not the awesome movie that I thought it was. What about you? Did you see Spawn theatrically?
I thought it looked like shit as a teenager. I was like, that looks like crap. Now, this it actually had studio backing, right? Was this Sony? Was it Columbia Pictures that released this? It looked like a lower-tier thing. Like, I guess today you might say it's like, I don't know, Lionsgate, which I know Lionsgate has had a lot of success with, like, the Hunger Games. But, the backing would be certainly not of Warner Brothers quality. Now, that's probably unfair because in the late 90s they were coming off, well, this summer, they were coming off of Batman and Robin, for God's sakes. But the money was on the screen. It was not well used for Batman and Robin, but it was there. A lot of people were getting paid. I don't have the affinity for the Spawn character. I've kind of always kept that when I was younger. I think I've told you before when we've discussed superheroes, like I was very much like a stick in the mud kid. Like you would have loved me. Like this is a weird thing to say. You would have loved being my father because I never spoke. Give me a book. I'll read it. The characters I aligned with were usually the leaders who were trying to like do the right thing. Like Cyclops is my favorite X-Men. So like I'm the one that was really bothered that Wolverine was like fucking things up and like being mean to others. So that's to say that like Spawn was not appealing to me even as a kid. I was like, oh, something from hell and like the devil and like, no. I'm sure I like admired sort of the look of the character, the red cape, which I decidedly do not in the film. Like, is good Lord, this is almost a decade after James Cameron's The Abyss. What are we can't do a cape? we can't do a nice long red cape that whips around. And I guess the closest approximation I can say to like me shifting to this style of anti-hero from the funny books would come a year later with Wesley Snipes in Blade. I don't know if I even had any knowledge of Blade as a comic book character. I really got into that movie, and I still to this day, like I rewatched it every few years. I really like Blade 1 and Blade 2 in particular, and I guess that's the closest I can come to understanding the Spawn fandom is liking Wesley Snipes as the daywalking vampire. I don't know. I'm gonna pivot back to you. As someone who had that first comic book experience with Spawn, you said you enjoyed the film. So was this successful for, I guess, the younger audience, the teenage sensibilities as far as a film adaptation? Because where I don't have any of that fandom and I didn't watch it then, this is the first time watched for me, I can't really approximate what the reaction would have been in 1997 to this feature version.
I think I was a little underwhelmed in terms of the movie kind of going full rated R Spawn, because the comic is pretty violent, but you got things in the movie like the dog and the kid to make it a little more mainstream and kid friendly. So I remember even as a kid being like, well, it's kind of neutered down. There are changes, like Terry's character is white for some reason. And, you know, you look back on it, it's like, oh, because the studio didn't want it to be labeled as a black movie. So that's why they needed a white character in there, which is...
Like, it matters when you have John Leguizamo as whatever fucking clown he is. Like, all over the marketing, like, I would struggle to think, like, oh, it's a black movie with a blue-faced, fat, short clown pretty much dominating the trailer and almost dominating the movie. And I want to correct myself. So, wait, this is actually, like, New Line?
Oh, New Line, yes.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It
fits in their 90s aesthetic, for sure.
They even got the kid from Wes Craven's New Nightmare. He's hanging out with another burned character. Jeez. Guy can't escape him.
Some of that is funny that we have our company come in like, all right, New Line, bring in your gang. Who is the homeless dude who is the Qui-Gon Jinn of Spawn that I read was like a Neil Gaiman creation? And is absolutely atrocious here. And I don't know this actor, a Scottish actor, but when I opened his Wikipedia, he was described by Samuel Beckett as touched by genius and viewed by many of the Hamlet of his generation, compared to Marlon Brando, is playing Spawn's Qui-Gon Jinn. Look, this.
Well, I find it funny that you go to Qui-Gon Jinn because Spawn refers to him as Yoda in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfair to Liam Neeson because I was like, well, sort of dumpy older white guy, I guess. But quite, you know, Liam Neeson was still in really good shape, especially, I mean, probably still is for like an 80-year-old man or whatever. But this started off badly. Having like this Padawan learner experience, I feel like the first 10 minutes are like, all right. We know you're not going to understand this, so here's what's going on. And you have like three different like expository pieces within the initial exposition. And it's like, imagine if the Fellowship of the Ring opened with, well, there's a battle between good and evil, and you know they forged these rings, and there's Sauron, and you know humanity couldn't be trusted with all this power of the ring. But first, let's go back and let's explain that, you know, what this guy's problem is that he's a psychopath soldier, and that's why he couldn't hit. I'm like, all right. Like, we have like another 90 minutes. Like, and most of that material, they then go back over in the next 15 minutes.
100%. This script is all over the fucking place. And the exposition dumps all occur in voiceover narration. And the Spawn mythos isn't that complicated. It is a bit muddled, but I feel like you can streamline it, but they just want to get to, I don't know, the action and the spectacle right away.
Which the action is terrible. It's some of the worst action sequences I've ever seen. Like, Spawn, I had a hard time. Like I said, no background with the character. I had a hard time understanding what he can actually do. And I'm like, wait, this is what fucking Netscape Navigator Lucifer has sent to lead his army? Like, he seemingly, you know, was way more athletic and had more physical prowess as a human, but as soon as he's in demon form, he gets shot. He lays down for a minute, like green pus or goo comes out of him. He gets back up. He occasionally uses claws that he doesn't seem to have control over that like jump out of his like suit of armor. I don't know. Anytime you get into that supernatural, it's hard for me to then dump back down to like, let's just shoot it. Cause I'm wondering, I'm like, why wasn't he just a regular man? Like, I don't understand this sort of Faustian bargain they make with the guy. He dies and goes to hell, and they're the devil or whomever he is, this like little burning giant rat that talks to him that I guess represents the devil. You can jump in if that's actually a Spawn character. I just assumed it was the devil talking to him.
It's a real Spawn character. It's one of the devils in hell.
All right, so I assume he's middle management. He's, you know, Bill Lumberg or whatever talking to Spawn. Why do they need him to do anything that he's doing in this movie? Like, it's this, the power of hell seems like, I guess they enjoy a complicated plot to accomplish a very, very simple thing, which is they want this greedy politician who wants to be rich and powerful to start basically ending the world through warfare, through biological warfare. And it ends up that they need to put something in his heart that he agrees to, so that if he dies, it sets off the bombs. And I'm like, does hell not have the power just to like put a gun in someone's head and be like, push that button? All right, good. Like, I don't understand what's going on. I don't really understand Spawn's place in this movie either.
In the comic book, and God, I hate that, like that sentence alone, to start a sentence with that.
Well, Mike, let me pull the source material off the shelf.
Spawn is supposed to lead Hell's army in the war against Heaven. Essentially, that's the basic like one sentence plot. And I'll credit Grant Morrison. He actually added a really interesting concept to the Spawn lore, was this thing called psychoplasm that Hell has. It's a substance that allows you to manifest things from thoughts and emotion. And very Grant Morrison of him, too. And you can't put that in the movie, but essentially Jason Wynn, the Martin Sheen character, makes a deal with Hell in order to get his hands on some and experiment because he's a government employee who is interested in militarizing weapons. You know, that's just how it is.
See, I'm with you, kind of. I want to see the issue. Where does this government employee contact Hell? Pick up the phone. What is the origin of that? How does that happen?
As I continue to read more Respawn, I'll certainly clue you in on it. But yeah, the comic gets pretty slow moving. And so the movie really has to ramp it up. So the movie came out in 97. So let's say the script was made in, what, 96? The comic I'm reading, it like starts in like 93 to 94. So they have like a few years of material at that point, but still early stages. Can we talk about maybe something good? Okay, a lot of, I will admit that a lot of the things that I think are good about this movie are purely for like my own nostalgia. And I know that. And I know, so I'm coming in very biased. I'm not saying this is a good movie by any stretch of the imagination. But
Can I jump in just real quick here? You won't hear it, listeners. He started this Zoom call by saying, "Hey, Mike, I saw Anyone But You, which you loved and have seen multiple times last year, and the world loved. It was all right. Hey, Mike, I know you enjoyed Lisa Frankenstein. I didn't like it at all." Now, hear me out on Spawn. Let's not be too hasty with the negativity on 1997 Spawn.
We can be too hasty. I'm not crazy.
I'm actually interested in what you, and not in a, I'm about to attack you, way, what did you find enjoyable? Because for me, almost all of it was offensive, and I don't mean like politically incorrect, although I guess the clown character is like decidedly, you know, politically incorrect even for 1997. Like, he's trying to be cheeky and like, I can't believe I just said that, although I don't know why a psychopath soldier who's sent to hell and comes back really cares if he says something that crosses a line. I don't know why. Who, like, the clown doesn't seem to know his audience, as far as like, there are other things on these people's minds, like the end of the world, not something like he said something homophobic or racist or anything like that. I don't know. It's not the action. It's not that. It's not Martin Sheen as the guy who has the direct line to hell in the phone book. The weird cuckolding, I guess, if you want to call it that, where there's this like romance angle where Spawn comes back and he's been gone. He's been in hell for 5 years, which I don't, is he training during that time, or they just like, does it not feel like 5 years for him? I can't remember during one of the many voiceovers what the reasoning is. It seems like it's just there to establish that his wife has now moved on with his best friend. And so we get that emotional reaction, which I watched I hate to say this, a Collider interview, which is fucking terrible. That's a bad start. But I was like, I was looking at YouTube, like, what do people think of this now? Like, I wanted the mea culpa from Todd McFarlane or whoever was associated with it. And the closest I could get was that Michael Jai White, who was like, yeah, like I liked the more personal angle of the story, and they cut a lot of that out. I think that sounds equally horrible. Like, I cannot imagine this guy trying to moat with all the burn makeup. He looks like he's coming off of Stephen King's Thinner. That's the sort of the level of the budget we have here. Him emoting for his wife, who's now moved on with his best friend. The soap opera angle, I can't imagine that appealed to teenage boys either, other than someone else has my woman now. So, all that being said, I'm trying to imagine, what did Little Web and what is Grown Web, what do you think they did well here? For the Spawn fandom, of course.
I think the general atmosphere and look of the film, you know, the kind of the grungy late 90s Crow-esque vibe.
Okay. Like, I think
atmosphere was important in the film. So that, I think the film gets it right. I thought John Leguizamo, obviously, I think the best actor or acting presence in the film. I think he's having a lot of fun with the role for what it is. And he actually made me laugh a few times. I actually, you know, the cheerleader stuff.
Oh, no,
obviously not. But there are some, you know, I mean, there's a lot of groaners in the film. Michael J. White does not help, because he's essentially like a muscly black guy. He can't act. He's playing his mob character from The Dark Knight, essentially. It's the same character. And you have no reason to like the guy. He's a hired killer. And he doesn't bring anything.
And don't you hire this actor for his athleticism, correct? Like, you hire him, and it's such a stiff movie. Even the way the action scenes are cut together, there's never any flow. Like, there's a sequence where it's very much like a Stephen King, like, villain, I guess. Like, we're going to have the clown turn into this, like, giant spider-like thing or whatever, like out of nowhere. And then we're going to have like a 10-minute fight sequence where Spawn just gets pummeled. Spawn spends most of the movie getting his ass kicked and like stumbling around until something inadvertently shoots out of his body that he doesn't seem to understand. I can see why this appeals to hormonal adolescence, because it's like, I don't know what's happening to my body, but I feel like I should be powerful.
See, if the screenwriter or the director was like, let's equate it to him going through superhero puberty, I would be like, yeah, right on. There is a little bit of that in the comic.
Spider-Man, this is not. This is not. Got the sort of, I guess, mythos of Peter Parker, certainly. It's interesting as a time capsule. Like, yeah. You mentioned the Crow, you mentioned Blade. I feel like, well, it's sad to say, like, I guess most of the Crow's, the affection that people have for it and the sort of weight is the fact that the lead actor actually perished during filming, Brandon Lee. I do try, like, I rewatched it last fall. A local theater was doing like a sort of retro night, and that was one of the featured films. I do try to separate myself from that, and I still think it is really effective as a movie. The only thing that you would say is possibly, like, you know, I wouldn't say it's like cringy, because I actually find it interesting. Like, we're doing a whole year on the films of 1999 to see what was just considered like hip or aesthetically pleasant at the time to the audiences they're trying to get. I don't really mind seeing The Crow, which came out in the early 90s, which also maybe helps its sort of success that it was a little more timely. You do see with Spawn, even Blade, which I like, being on the tail end of that, like, it's so dark. Because, look, the character dresses in black, and it's always dark outside, and they're wearing sunglasses, and there's vampires and demons, and it has that sort of, do you play Vampire the Masquerade World of Darkness kind of feel, except we're bringing it to the masses. But I kind of like those little timestamps. I like that things don't necessarily feel like 2024, that it's of its time. It is weird to me that Spawn, I guess, has continued in comic books. I guess it's still being published, yes?
Yes, it's the longest-running independent comic, I think, of all time at this point. It is still going strong. They don't put out that many like issues. Like, Marvel can pump out, you know, hundreds and thousands of copies, mm-hmm. but Spawn's only, like, a limited run. But still, people still collect it very, very religiously. That's part of the charm, I think, of the film, is that it's high-end cosplay. Like, you look at the Spawn character on screen, and you're like,
that's a good way to
put
it.
That looks exactly like what it is in the comic. They did change a couple things. In the comic, he does have, it's like an actual mask. The suit is a little sentient, but it essentially turned him into Venom, the way the suit kind of works, which I was like, yeah, whatever. All of that looks pretty good, at least all the stuff that's in the dark at night, raining, when you have a clear shot of hell at the end, you're like, this looks like ass.
It reminded me of having what I called a CD-ROM when I was a kid. Like, I'm going to go play with the CD-ROM and trying to watch something in a tiny little square on your desktop, heavily pixelated. You need this to be heavily pixelated. You need to watch this on a gateway computer circa 97, 98 and have a blast with it.
One of the things I read was more than half of the final effects for the film were delivered 2 weeks before the release date. So,
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a modest success, I think, like $40 million budget, and it earned like 80. So, you know, I don't know. I did see that, like, Roger Ebert gave it 3.5 stars out of 4. So that is mind-bending to me. And he and Siskel got into it on an episode of At the Movies about it.
Good for you, Gene. Thank you, Gene. Roger must have had a really good meal right before or after Spawn, and he was just, like, in the afterglow or something. Like, yeah, it was a good night at the movies. Yeah, it's fine. I say that in jest. I always respect when, especially someone of Ebert's stature, he had to know, if he was giving a positive reaction to this, that he's on the outside. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's not something that he's like 20 years from now, I'll be vindicated with my love of Spawn. So, you know, good for you. If you had a good time with it, that's fine with me.
He did. And he blamed Siskel, like, you just don't like comic book movies. And Siskel was like, he's like, I like Batman. And that was his response to it.
He sounds like my mom or something in that response. Like, well, what's the most successful one? I liked it. Everything else stinks.
Oh, you know, some of the digital stuff I think is okay. The digital cape is terrible, but for the, you know, I enjoyed John Leguizamo's character, the Violator, turning into his like monster form. There was a couple moments that were like, oh, that's kind of cool. And again,
why couldn't Spawn? Does he not wear the cape like all the time in the comics?
He does.
I don't understand why he couldn't just have a real cape. Why was the cape like a special shitty looking CGI treat for us? Because he looks awkward. He looks awkward in this black bodysuit. Like, you're talking about the cosplay aspect of it. If I saw someone just walking like that, I'd be like, where's the fucking cape? Did like someone like, did you spill something on it? Like, why are you going sans cape? And I kept waiting for it. And then when it would appear, I'm like, oh, that's what we're getting this. I don't know. Look, it's unfair that as far as the budgetary restraints that they decided that it was like what I think originally like a $20 million budget. I feel like if you're doing it that way, you have to do it like The Crow. You have to say we're just leaning into the vibe and the look of this and we're going to keep it street level. I don't know if the fans would have appreciated a street level warrior from hell about to lead an army, but my first note as an executive is we don't have any sequences in hell. we just think maybe this guy, maybe he's just like lost it. Maybe he's just a crazy homeless person, much like his mentor who was like ignored by the city. And all of these sort of machinations are happening by the outcast of society. That's what I would lean into. See, I think I would be a fine studio executive. I was like, I can save us some money. We're going to a small wager on the table and we'll see if the Spawn fan base shows up.
I believe you're for the response for the cape, the way that it's drawn the comic, I think they wanted to, you can't have a real cape look the way it does in the book, the way McFarlane draws it. So I think the CGI cape was the only way to make it as fantastical, which I don't think it works. I don't think it would have worked even if they had like a real one. I think that would have been even more awkward looking. And I do 100% agree. You'd be a great studio exec. That's the timeline I want to live in.
Cut.
One last thing that I want to ask about the legacy of this film. And some people say, well, you know, it was one of the first superhero films to feature a black character right in the center of it. Is this kind of like a film that leads to Blade and, I mean, to maybe even a bigger success to Black Panther? Do you see it as a stepping stone, or is it just a, you know, a footnote in the history of the superhero genre?
I think not as a, I don't think as a film, this is looked upon as a black character. And that's mainly because you're doing everything in your power to cover him up. Like, goddamn. I mean, there's a lot of Tobey Maguire sort of isms here as far as the mask always being off. But in this case, we don't even see the actor. He's covered in like burn makeup. So if there, you know, yet another Mike executive note, he comes back from hell when he's been deemed, hey, you get promoted to lead hell's army. We're going to fix your fucking face because we can do that in hell. Like if you want to terrorize people, you know, put the mask on with the sort of the white sort of like typical sort of like eyes that you have for like a drawn superhero character. That's fine. But when you have the mask off, we're going to have Mr. White is going to be there, and we're actually going to see him use his athleticism in action sequences too. This is going to be, I don't think the film, I do think that in pop culture, I think he is seen as a black character and sort of an icon as far as in the superhero field. I think he is there with like a Blade or Black Panther. I think that Blade, and I'm not just saying this because I prefer the movie, because it was Wesley Snipes and you can see his face and there's a certain attitude and stature that Snipes had, especially in the 90s, I think he is seen as that is more of a defined black character in pop culture for films. But I do think in comp books, I think in that field, I think, yeah, Spawn, I think it is, he's seen as part of black culture, which I think is, you know, that's pretty fucking cool, especially coming from, you know, Lily White, Todd McFarlane, good for you to try to extend and sort of open your arms as far as like people that you can welcome in, even though I don't know that if I had a young black child, I'd be like, all right, here's your hero, demon spawn from hell. This is like murderous psychopath, but he does have an affinity for dogs. I did appreciate that. At least the film version, He very much likes to protect a dog that he probably has not thought about in his 5 years of eternal damnation.
And that's the thing. I wish you had made the character a little more likable. The dog helped. I guess his relationship with the kid and Cyan a little helps too. I mean, in the comic, one of the things that I really liked is that he kind of becomes a champion for the homeless people in this, you know, crime alley or whatever.
That's a cool take. That's, you know, that's totally opposite. And this is anecdotal. But like I've talked with, black coworkers, you know, cause you can't escape obviously superhero movies now. And it's, like I said, very anecdotal, not a lot of love for Batman. Batman is seen as a rich white fascist, which, you know, I'm like, hey, have you read a lot of Frank Miller? Is that your version of the character? So having the opposite, having someone on the ground who is treated as the forgotten, as the homeless, even in this film, the sequence where he does come back home, like the disgust with which they look at someone who's clearly wounded and troubled, this family. I like that aspect of it. I'm glad that's the direction the character went. I think you could have put a little bit of that in this film, but that's probably a little bit more politically charged than what we're going to get from a New Line late 90s superhero movie, if they even called him a superhero movie then. I think this was definitely wanting to lean more into like the horror action field. But you tell me, aren't they, haven't they kicked around doing another Spawn? Has this not been like on the cusp of being greenlit like numerous times?
Yes, it's been in developmental hell for years now. Jamie Foxx has been really wanting to play Spawn, but I mean he's getting old, right? I mean, you know, he can be in makeup for whatever, but I think it's past. I mean, there's no interest in it. I can't imagine a Spawn movie gets announced and a trailer gets dropped and all of a sudden people are re-energized. I would have to be doubted, especially with the superhero fatigue that appears to be setting in. We'll see. I think Deadpool and Wolverine's going to change that a little bit, but for the most part, yeah, we're...
I think if you have movie stars, and, you know, Spawn has a slightly different hook, you know, if you want to do it that way, I feel like... I'm shocked that Blumhouse has not already just released something, because I feel like those cats know how to make a buck on anything. So I'm kind of shocked that it's just sitting there. But yeah, I agree with you. Jamie Foxx, you know, 10 years ago, I think would have been perfect. But it's much like when he was Django. I remember during the publicity tour for that, Sam Jackson was like, you know, 20 years ago, this would have been my character. And now I get to be the villain in this movie. So. But yeah, I would say if you get a star of his stature, that it would be interesting to just see more than one black superhero, or two, I guess, if Blade ever comes back to the MCU. That would be cool to see on the big screen. But unfortunately, like a lot of mostly like diverse voices, like just touching on the MCU, like we get an all women team. And it's a financial disaster in the Marvels. And it's like, it's not, probably not like a reflection of, oh, people don't want diversity in comics or, you know, comic book movies. It's the fact that you waited like 15, 16 years before you did it. And people are just tired of them now. So I do find that unfortunate if, you know, Spawn for the fans came back out, even though I'm not one of them. And people are like, more comic book shit. Don't want it. It's like, well, if you'd done this in 2014 or 15, might have been a different story.
100%. Lastly, I got to ask you one last question. What looks worse, the Spawn scenes in hell or Deacon Frost trying to put himself together after being sliced in half?
Definitely the Spawn scenes in hell, because I really struggled to think of something like worse looking. Like I think it was called like Microsoft Movie Maker that I used to fuck around with in the late 90s. I thought it was cool shit. And you could just like move little crappy looking like three-dimensional characters around the sort of static background. Although it was not that far off from Steven Dorff with his stupid punchable face smirking as his blood hand like reforms. Not that far off. But because we get Steven Dorff mugging, I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go with the mugging actor and the bad effects as over the, God, Lord, like Peter Jackson. Like I would love to see like Jackson or James Cameron an audio commentary of them watching stuff like Spawn, knowing damn well that you can do better than this and hear their thoughts on this end result.
I like the idea of the employee at Industrial Light and Magic looking at his calendar and be like, wait a minute, we're supposed to get that Spawn stuff out. Is Microsoft Movie Maker still up?
Here we go. We move the little demon rat around, move his mouth up and down, good to go.
I don't mind being short, fat, and ugly, but the pay sucks.
The comic book industry was failing in the 80s. Todd McFarlane created Venom, and then he created Spawn. And he brought darkness, edginess, death, vulgarity. Nobody was doing that. And we revolutionized the whole comic book industry. It was a big deal. It was the first black superhero, so everybody was excited by it.
Funny, funny, he's our man. If you can't kill him, no, I can't. Yay, funny. S to the B to the A to the war. S to the B to the A to the war. Goes funny, goes funny.
Well, the first day was 8 hours, but they got it down to 4 hours. So I would get up at 3 a.m., start makeup at 4 a.m., be done by 8 a.m., and then go on set. And it took like about an hour and a half to take the makeup off. But it was old school, too. It was old school techniques. There was no coolant coming through. I was sweat. I would drip, soaking wet. You could wring the costume out. So I had to constantly remind myself to hydrate. And the breaks, you know, the whole thing was glued to my face, so I couldn't take it off for lunch. And I had these big teeth, giant eye contacts. It would make you lose your mind sometimes, but it was worthwhile. It was like, cause I was so miserable that it added to the character's edginess. And Mark DePay, the director, was so fun to work with. So loose, so chill. He let me ad lib all this madness. And the edgier ad libs are in the director's cut.